Cast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
All right, and good morning, everyone here. We are working now on our 102nd meeting. That seems so strange when I think about how all of this got started, and it doesn't seem so long ago. But we've been going at it, you know, most every week, except during conference and a few other times. And our academic reading is number 42 as we are making our way through the Glamour, A World Problem. It's a wonderful book, and it doesn't make any difference what DK is writing about. It has relevance. I've been doing some work on the externalization of the hierarchy, so there are nine of those programs that are done right now, and I sort of began at the eve of World War II, 1939, and it's so interesting to see how the Tibetan is writing to people on the very eve of the invasion by Germany of Poland. And there's something unique always that he contributes. There's a timeless element about what he talks about, even though he may be located in time and has to refer occasionally to phenomena and events. The timelessness of his suggestions is really of great value. So I'll plow on with that, and looks like we're also, you know, going to have some transcription of the white magic tapes or videos. There's quite a few of those, and they're in the process of being rendered into print as well. So, you know, you'll have plenty to think about and plenty to study. All of this is my effort to have people revive a very burning interest in Master DK's writings for the next 6 years before he begins to write anew, as he says, around the year 2025. So, you know, it may be, you know, it's getting in process, and we'll just have to be very alert to who the amanuensis may be if that's his method of working. Let's just have a little bit of an alignment here. And then we will get into some more of these glamours. A few of the glamours he has dealt with, they affect all of humanity, or in some cases, aspirants and disciples. And that's what I think the ones we're working on today affect people who are striving as we are striving. So we're as if coming together and gathered at the periphery of Master DK's ashram under the influence of Master DK and trying to contribute our little bit to the dissipation of these distorting, clouding, veiling energies through which one must penetrate and which one must dissipate. And when we look into the world, we see how firmly held are so many millions of people by exactly these factors, at least people of our persuasion are aware that there is an alternative, and that the very factor of perception, limited perception, may be at fault. So we're trying to change the way we perceive. And that may be because we're so accustomed to it. It may be more difficult than we normally suspect. But if we keep at this time after time, you know, we will make an inroad, and along with the other groups that are working in this way, we will do something of value. You know, one of the things I like about what we're doing is that we're reading the books at the beginning of these sessions in ASK. You know, the work of invocation is what it's all about. So we're reading The Reappearance of the Christ and The Destiny of the Nations and the Glamour Book, and there'll be, you know, all kinds of readings from these great books. The pressure is on now for assimilation, which we have to take seriously if we're going to be as useful as possible. A dual life it is, you know, there's so much going on the outer plane, but our connection is also with hierarchy, just as the dual life is being led by hierarchy in relation to Shambhala and humanity. And it's about this kind of duality that the first glamour that we're going to deal with occurs. I go backwards here a little bit and see if I can possibly find, well, it looks like a minefield, but there it is. We've been dealing with the glamour of materiality. Fairly easy to understand, a superficial perception based upon the senses, the glamour of sentiment, which is all about liking and disliking and is based on personal factors, the glamour of devotion, which begins to kick in as we, it's common in humanity, of course, in the masses of people. It's related to mass consciousness, but also very much to the aspirant. And now we'll see if we can, we'll deal today with the glamour of the pairs of opposites, maybe get into the glamours of the path. He says, you know, these are widespread glamours. And early, around page 120, he gives us the specific ray glamours, and there are more, of course. I think we will review them when we get there, of course, because we have, it was a long time ago. And it's, since glamour is such an elusive factor, it's like other people see it, you know, and we ourselves don't see it because we're so accustomed to perceiving through it. So, you know, if any time before the third initiation and even a little bit afterwards, although the fight with illusion is on, we have to clear up those wisps of glamour that still remain, and including the glamour of having no glamours. All right, so I just want to welcome you, Alexandra, and Annette, and Ario, Carol, Catherine, Chris, Deborah, Karen, Lona, Marianne, Mariut, Martha, Risto, let's see here, Sam, welcome Sam, Suzanne, Tuya, Zenaide, Anna Veronica, right and over here is Michael doing yeoman's work to keep us on the screen and keep us honest here. So welcome everybody. All right, let's go on. Upon the probationary path, there comes the swing, consciously registered, between the pairs of opposites until the middle way is sighted and emerges. Now, this glamour of the pairs of opposites, if we were to look here, let's just say, in esoteric astrology and, maybe page one, I don't know, is that it? Oh, no, it's probably, it's probably 3:30 or something like that. Let's just see, 3:29. Yeah, the different kinds of light are interesting because Libra is involved in this pairs of opposites. And notice that it is a vertical movement. One can think of the horizontal movement, and neither one is better than the other. But when it comes to the vertical movement, that which is superior is considered of greater import than that which it contains and which is below it. So the light that moves to rest, this is the light that oscillates until a point of balance is achieved. Note this now. It is the light which is distinguished by a moving up and down. All right. Now that is really worth noting, the up and down part of this. All right, I'm trying to... right, okay. So, the middle way is a way on the vertical path, and it's between the demands of the soul and the requirements of the personality. And we do know that Libra is particularly that sign which gives equal attention to the requirements of both of these pairs of opposites. Of course, they're not really opposites at all, but that's how we perceive it. So there comes the swing consciously registered between the pairs of opposites until the middle way is sighted and emerges. And regarding this middle way, it always is rising. So let's see if I can put that in. The middle way continues to rise, that the point of tension continues to rise. That is, if we are functioning in the correct disciplic manner. This activity produces the glamour of the pairs of opposites, which is of a dense and foggy nature. Let's pause there for a second, because I think we're all caught in it, you know, to a certain extent, and we have to see how and why. Sometimes colored with joy and bliss, and sometimes colored with gloom and depression, as the disciple swings back and forth between the dualities. You know, sometimes we're walking in the light of the soul, and other times we seem very confined to the personality without being able to touch the exhilarating energies of the soul. Now, we might think this is a strictly Piscean glamour, but in the chapter on Aquarius, he tells us that the sign, the glyph of Aquarius, you know, looks like a sine wave, gives us very much the hill and valley experience. And he says, you know, the Aquarian is sometimes walking in the sunny light of the soul and other times in deep gloom. So the well, you know, when this is a problem in psychology, we call it manic depressive psychosis. You know, there's an alternation, and it goes along with the fourth ray, and there's an instability in the form in terms of responding to the soul. This is what causes it. The form just cannot take the constant pressure, light, energy applied by the shining sun of the soul, and withdraws. The form withdraws and approaches and withdraws. And we become that vacillating point of light. That's how the masters see us. We approach and withdraw. Instead of a, let's say, a point of steadily approaching radiance, which could be achieved on the path of discipleship. So this condition, and maybe, you know, think about it in your own life. I know I've gone through periods like this, and it is really distressing, you know, sometimes even in the same day and for days at a time, up and down. All right, this condition persists just as long as the emphasis is laid upon feeling. And, you know, we realize we have a potent astral body here, and the majority of DK students were working toward the second initiation, whether it might be in that particular life or in a few lives ahead. It was considered a high place to have achieved. So naturally, there was a lot of attention given to the astral body and its fluctuations, maybe more so than we would like to admit, you know. In our solar system and upon our planet, the astral body, well, let's say, in our solar system, it is a vehicle which is prominent because we live in an astral Buddhic solar system and have not yet achieved the third cosmic degree, solar systemically. when it comes to our planet, well, we're not even at the second initiation. And that is coming up around the time, let's say, of what we call the Judgment Day, which is still far ahead. So planetarily, we have a pretty strong astral emphasis, and it affects everybody. So just as long as the emphasis is laid upon feeling, which feeling will run the gamut between a potent joyfulness as the man seeks to identify himself with the object of his devotion or aspiration, or fails to do so, and therefore succumbs to the blackest despair and sense of failure. This is a common oscillation, and it just can't be avoided on the path, you know, until we work our way out of it. All this is, however, astral in nature and sensuous in quality, and this is the point, and is not of the soul at all. The soul may have its cycles, okay, but it's not going to be these distressing ups and downs which are associated with this experience. No, the soul will shine with relative consistency, and it is the approaching and withdrawing personality in the light of the soul which causes this. We have a phenomenon to which psychology has drawn our attention. It's called the repression of the sublime, or maybe sometimes if one is aware of it, one calls it the suppression of the sublime, meaning that we withdraw in the face of light because we can't stand the intensity of the light. Aspirants remain for many years and sometimes for many lives imprisoned by this glamour. You know, the mystical path is not over immediately. It takes a little while for that center of concentration, which remains above the head, to descend into the middle of the head etherically. And we really get a grip on things, and we become more the true disciple and initiate. So, you know, the longing and the sense of duality, here's God, here's what I am, you know, here's heaven, here's what I am. That sense of duality, which is not true, but is perceived as such, may be maintained for many years and even lives. Now, we, you know, so many of us come from a mystical path, and we can't really lose that. When you look at the synthesizing planets, well, Saturn is there, okay. But this is a Neptune issue. And on our way to Uranus, which is a cult mind and the flash of intuition and having to do with the spiritual archetype, we don't want to lose Neptune on the way. Neptune is very important because it gives us the kind of sensitivity that the Christ has cultivated to a very, very high degree, and we're just learning a little something about it. So, release from the world of feeling, he talks about this in the Cancerian chapter, you know, and the polarizing of the disciple in the world of the illumined mind. Polarizing in the world of the illumined mind will dissipate this glamour, which is part of the great heresy of separateness. Actually, these factors within the human being are all of one piece, and they're not as separate as they seem to be to the unillumined perception. Now, when you use a word, I sometimes use the word focus in the world of the illumined mind, because actually polarization is a word that is reserved for a period of time between the second and third initiation. And so few of the Tibetan students in the Dynabooks had achieved that point. they were not really mentally polarized, even though they could be mentally focused. So the polarization has something to do with the ability to really bring in the light of the soul and hold the mind steady in the light. And that has something to do with the experience in the desert after the purification, after the baptism. So I think, you know, there's a lot of us as students that are in need of the great purification as by fire, which will occur at the second degree. And then we can talk about true mental polarization. But anyway, he uses that word here. The polarizing of the disciple in the world of the illumined mind will dissipate this glamour, which is part of the great heresy of separateness. He says it is the one great heresy, and it is, as far as I can understand, the basis of all illusion. Seeing, perceiving in a fragmentary manner. Now, that's just a natural thing to do. The senses seem to separate things, one thing from another thing, and we have to be aware of the unity and commonality of it all. Okay, so here we are. The moment a man differentiates his life into triplicities, as he inevitably must, as he deals with the pairs of opposites and identifies himself with one of them. Now, what might we say? We might say the personality, the soul, and the one between, you know, the observer, the one between. We might call it the disciple or the aspirant. The moment he does this, he succumbs to the glamour of separation. It takes a long time to try to put all this together. If you're an occultist, you are into what we call identification, and the sense of separation disappears. If we are a mystic, it's another matter. And if we are a mystic, there's always the subject and the object, and they are different. When we begin to learn how to contemplate, the subject and the object begin to be united. And that's under the sign Libra that this really begins to happen. Perhaps this point of view may aid, or perhaps it will remain a mystery. And then this enigmatic sentence, for the secret of world glamour lies hid in the thought that this triple differentiation veils the secret of creation. Well, up at the very top of the universe, you might say we have three factors, the subject, object, and relationship between. And it seems that, you know, we have the spirit, we have matter, and then we have consciousness, the relationship between. And these three factors are necessary for the creation of the universe. Brahma, in a way, is the creator of the universe. He is the third ray aspect, and there are three aspects to him. So we begin our inner quest, you know, let's just say under Leo and Virgo, with a sense of being of three factors operating. We think of ourselves as the subject. We observe the object and think of it as separate from what we are. And then there's the consciousness, which makes us aware, we, the subject, aware of the object. Now, eventually, under the, let me see if I can find that for you. If I go to A Treatise on White Magic, and I go to page 473, we'll see what lies ahead of us in terms of what we must do. Here it is. Number six, learn that the thinker and his thought and that which is the means of thought are diverse in their nature, yet one in ultimate reality. Learn that the thinker and his thought and that which is the means of thought are diverse in their nature, apparently. In the early phase, yet one in ultimate reality, and we have to unite all of these, and we begin to really unite them in the stage of contemplation. And we can think of contemplation as sort of midway in the series of meditative steps: concentration, meditation, contemplation, illumination, inspiration, initiation. So those he gives us basically from Leo to Capricorn, and a particular phase of the meditative process for each sign of the zodiac. But contemplation can be taken very, very high. And when an individual slips into the state of samadhi, where the oneness of things is appreciated, it's considered to be a contemplative state. All right. God himself produced the pairs of opposites, spirit and matter, or I like to say became spirit and matter. I'm always, you know, when it comes to creation and the work of the hand or the work of the mind, becoming always makes more sense to me. But, you know, words veil. So God himself produced the pairs of opposites, spirit and matter, and also produced the middle way, the way of consciousness, right? Which is that of the consciousness aspect or the soul aspect. Ponder deeply on this thought. Well, while I'm highlighting it, you can ponder. God himself produced the pairs of opposites, spirit and matter, and also produced the middle way, which is that of the consciousness aspect or the soul aspect. Ponder deeply on this thought. Well, all of us are attempting to enhance on this planet and in this solar system the consciousness aspect. Our planet is dedicated to the enhancement of the consciousness aspect, and certainly our solar system is. It's the second major solar system, and when we're dealing with the number two, we're dealing with consciousness. Just look back over your life and your studies in esotericism, and you know, try to see to what extent the consciousness has become more sensitive, more expansive, how you have gone beyond certain rings past not in your studies and in your meditation. It's the enhancement of the consciousness aspect, and this also is what is defining initiation, as well as the skill, ability to wield the consciousness aspect. The wield the powers of a particular point of tension using an enhanced consciousness aspect. The triplicity of the pairs of opposites and of the narrow way of balance between them, the noble middle path, is the reflection on the astral plane of the activity of spirit, soul, and body, of life, consciousness, and form, the three aspects of divinity, all of them equally divine. You know, DK is a master teacher, and he gives us these mnemonics to just help us remember certain things. They sometimes come in threes, and they sometimes start with the same letter, you know. I'm trying to think about today. Like for instance, instinct, intellect, intuition, you know, those three I's go together. And, you know, a number of D's go together to help us remember better. Discipline, dispassion, discrimination, decentralization, detachment, you know, it's easier to remember those five together because they all begin with the letter D. So somehow we have to learn to tread this ever rising noble middle path between the opposites. If we live a life that's too material, we ignore the higher possibilities. If we live a life that's too elevated, then we become impractical, or what he calls the impractical mystic, you know, so heavenly high that they're no earthly good, something like that, you know. So somewhere between, we have to balance the demands of spirit, of the soul and the personality, and eventually of spirit and matter. And eventually we find with Blavatsky that they're all the same thing. They are all the product of the pure presence, all the product of being. But this takes, you know, I think it takes us a little while to begin to synthesize these factors. So the glamour of the pairs of opposites, and do we have a stable position in the illumined, observing mind of the process? And can we study what's going on with ourselves with a degree of scientific objectivity? This is what Roberto Assagioli was recommending. And it's part of the Tibetans' don't care attitude. I don't care what I see. I see what I see in truth. At least that's the beginning phase. See what's there. And then you can do something about it. But if we have this emotional bias, and we're horrified by what we see, or overly exalted by what we see, then we've fallen into this foggy glamour, and there's no stability in it. And it's all operative on the basis of feeling and sentiency, and we will live the unstable life instead of the real life of discipleship. Now, I think... okay. I think that may be enough. It'll give us a chance to discuss the mystical life and the life of the occultist, and the blend of Uranus and Neptune, and the blend of the mind and the heart, and the Venus approach of love and light. And we'll take up the next one next time. I don't want to overdo it, and we have still a lot to do today. So I've been pretty well dealing with one of these per session, but I think you can see from your own perspective why this is a very important glamour, and how, and the question coming to us is, how stable are we on the path of our training? Are we always losing it, so to speak, you know, and not holding a steady center? This is academic reading number 42. And gosh, we're in February already, aren't we? Okay, so February 19, and the next one is the 8th, I suppose, of February, and it'll be number 43. And basically, we just did a little bit in terms of pages, and that's okay as long as we have some kind of understanding. Looks like we've made it to page 80. So we'll begin here next time with 80. And it'll be, okay, I don't know what's happened here. Anyway, I thought we'd be in the evening, but instead we're in the, next time we'll be in the evening. Okay. So, and I suppose this is page 79 or something like that, where we're sort of beginning. Yes, it is 79 to 80, just a page, but a very potent glamour, which can hold us in a state of distortion and instability for a long time. So we have to think about the way we live the spiritual life. Now, there's an intense mystical aspiration which is possible to certain types of people. I think he says they come from Neptune, and you know they're very much under the sixth ray, and they can even, this is amazing thought, they can even die of their aspiration. They can have such intense longing for the higher worlds. You know, a lot of that was common during the age of Pisces that we are now leaving. Such intense longing that they just leave the body and don't come back. They have not achieved the balance which will be required of the Aquarian disciple, an intense inner life and outer effectiveness. And I think the masters, as they externalize, will be setting the example of how this works. And we as disciples on our own level will emulate them and live the dual life of discipleship effectively. I guess the thing to avoid, you know, is depression. I think we've all been subject to it at times. Sometimes it's said to be a lowering of the vibration, or health factors can enter in, but it always has to do with identifying with the threefold form and its limitations, especially as you begin to see the higher possibilities and realize how far at times we seem separated from the appreciation of these higher possibilities and the way of entering into them and wielding them and having the realm in which they occur be our real point of tension. Actually, you see, we have an unstable point of tension. And if we can ever learn, you know, to hold that mind steady in the light at all times, even though having a sensitive astral apparatus and a vital etheric physical apparatus, then we will have taken a major step on the path of discipleship. Of course, a lot of it will depend upon your ray. It's easier for some ray types to hold that point of tension, and the idea of fluctuation comes with other ray types. And, you know, the fluctuating types, they develop sensitivity very fast. He says of the fourth ray type, well, either very rapid progress or becomes a ne'er-do-well. You know, a ne'er-do-well is someone who never does anything well. So, you know, with the fourth and the sixth ray, there are problems with fluctuation. Even though, and that makes sense because those two rays rule the path of aspiration. And what we're talking about here is the one who is aspiring. The third and the fifth ray rule the path of discipleship. I suppose especially accepted discipleship. And the first and the seventh ray rule the path of initiation, with Ray 2 being the synthesis of it all, at least on our planet and in our solar system. Okay, friends, so let's have your thoughts, your questions, and maybe we can, you know, and your reflection upon your own life, because even if you do not find yourself at this stage of fluctuation, maybe in the recapitulatory process, you might have gone through it. I mean, I certainly know, you know, the earlier part of my life with the fourth ray personality, this was much more common thing. And, you know, it's like a recapitulation and then the whole mystical phase, you know, but then things maybe straighten out and become more stable. And maybe that's the case with you as well. Or maybe you're deeply in the throes of this particular process, which distorts the appreciation of the unity of things and their relatedness, and even eventually of the sameness of all things. There's kind of an old Buddhist idea that when you can look in any direction and see that all things are the same, it is an achievement. It doesn't mean that we don't differentiate in the practical world. We do, but we understand somehow in a very deep way that the substratum is the real thing. And that's always the same wherever, whatever part of the universe you're in, it's always the same. Okay, so your thoughts. Looking. Looking for you, if you have anything you'd like to say, or, you know, as I always say about occultism in general. Because, you know, the floor is sort of open. Occultism is one great body of wisdom and knowledge. So everything leads to everything else, and everything is related to everything else. Anything you would like to deal with or question, or anything in your own life which seems to reflect this stage. You know, sometimes DK has said that it's not so much being able to see the glamour, because that's hard, but when you look at the results of things, of how you lived your life, maybe the glamour will appear. And he kind of was humorous when he said, you know, a lot of disciples almost get kind of proud and excited about the fact that they're up against some glamour, which he says is part of the whole glamorous situation. Anyway, the veil upon reality, over-accentuated attraction or repulsion, instability, inability to see reality beyond the pulls and pushes of the astral plane. This is what we're trying to overcome. Anybody that would like to speak, or have I, as the cat, got your tongue, so to speak?
I am seeing no hands or questions at this point.
Me too. Should we have a moment of mourning, or maybe just...
maybe you'd like to talk about how sometimes the difficulties that we see in others are just the expressions within ourselves that we're not recognizing.
Well, you know, that would have to do with the whole psychological phenomenon of projection. And, you know, it comes when we don't really know ourselves very well. There's something in us, but we haven't recognized that it really is in us. And somehow we throw it out on the other person and then treat the other person not as they are, but as we imagine them to be, because we have put our own condition upon them. Now, you know, one of the signs of psychological health is the ability to remove one's projections. So when you think about a person, if you think about them in kind of a emotional way, let's say, a way that involves a lot of attraction and repulsion, you know, the glamour of sentiment, as we have discussed, then you can suspect a projection from yourself. If someone really, really irks you, you know what I mean? Really bothers you. What is it about that person that really bothers me? It's sometimes, you know, our very own stuff that we have put upon that other individual. So, for any of us on this particular path, and the path of observing and eradicating glamours, self-knowledge is the key. But, you know, it takes a while on the path before we have the real inclination to study ourselves with a fair amount of fearlessness. Now, you're kind of reminded about Leo, aren't you? The lion hunting, Hercules hunting the lion, you might say, or the lion seeking its own prey, the higher lion seeking the lower lion. It's always escaping. What we are is always escaping from the cave via an exterior entrance or exit, and we can't get hold of what it is about us that's really happening. But then we learn to block the rear entrance of the cave. And then we can really know who is this king of beasts, we as Hercules, or we as the higher lion, the lion of the soul facing the lion of the personality. There are three lions, in my view anyway. The monad is one, the soul is another, and then the king of beasts, the personality. And it's not the most pleasant thing. I think I've mentioned to you earlier that before Roberto Soggioli passed on, he said to his disciples or those who were tending him, he said, to make sure they do their personal work. It's so easy to plunge into the field of esotericism full of confidence without having done one's personal work and without suspecting that lurking within us is the very thing we so detest and are repelled by in the outer world. So just the attitude of the observer, quietly, always with an eye on what we're doing as well as an eye upon what has to be done in the inner world and the outer world. So there's the self, there's the outer world, and there's the inner world. It's like, in a way, a triple eye, you might say. If we keep that alert, we won't be fooled. We won't be deceived by conditions within ourselves that we have missed and throw upon the other person as a result. Okay, it must be one of those mornings. Okay, Ed Veronica.
Yes, she asks, please talk a bit more about the pair of opposites on the vertical and on the horizontal examples. And then she adds, could we say the middle path is to be able to handle the horizontal and the vertical energies, the point in the middle of the cross?
Yeah, that would be the ideal situation. I gave a talk a few years ago at the conference on precisely this subject. Probably have forgotten everything I said, but let's just say that when we're dealing with the vertical pairs of opposites, we're dealing with a values system. We're dealing with spirituality versus materiality, and we need to infuse the lower with the higher, and we're dealing with a certain point of tension which exists between our higher spiritual possibilities and our present material state. And that point of tension should always be rising, and the lower part of those opposites should become kind of what you might call a subset of the higher. In other words, the soul infuses the personality, the soul contains the personality, just the way the monad will contain later the soul-infused personality. So we're always rising on the pairs of opposites in that way. And, you know, when DK talks about the cardinal cross, mutable cross, fixed cross, he's basically saying all those four arms contribute to a synthesis which is found in the very center of the cross. And, you know, when the, let's just say when the cross is elevated from the center, you have the pyramid or the symbol of initiation or an initiatory temple. So the square is on the bottom and the four triangles are on the side, and the middle point is elevated. And as it is elevated, it synthesizes the tendencies of the four arms of the cross. So indeed, the cross can be very painful and pull you apart, or the cross can begin to whirl, come together, be synthesized, and become one thing in the very center of the cross, which then becomes elevated. So as we strive, as we meditate, as we study, as we apply, our ability to hold the center of the cross increases, and the elevation of the cross from the central point begins. But speaking of the horizontal arm, there is not necessarily a value system contained in it. Is hot better than cold? Is large better than small? There are all kinds of horizontal pairs of opposites which have equal value on a continuum depending upon what the need is. You know, if you are locked in some refrigeration place and someone opens the door and you begin to experience the heat, then heat is good. And if you are in the desert and you're exhausted and parched and dehydrated, then the coolness of an oasis and the water there, they are good. So these are relative differences on the horizontal pairs of opposites, and we cannot say good or bad. We can only say good or bad with respect to the present need. So this is where skill in action comes in. We have to know, you know, is high better than low? You can't say it. You know, is the people are superficial from one point of view and deep from another. But is down better than up? Well, down is usually better than up, but left and right, except for the left-hand path, are not necessarily better than the other. Is one hemisphere of the brain better than the other? You see, we have to synthesize these things, and we have to utilize the tendency on the horizontal cross according to the need. And when we can skillfully do that, we can come to the center. And when we can skillfully rise through aspiration, we stay in that center at an ever heightening point of tension. So basically, the pairs of opposites, as they apply to the aspirant or the disciple, have a lot to do with ascending or descending in vibration. And there you can have a value system. But as they learn how to handle the world, we're on the horizontal system, and the horizontal may call upon the left or the right, the hot or the cold, you know, all that kind of thing. And you know, when you look at colors, they are complements of each other. Some of them, is one better than the other? Not necessarily. It's all according to your need as you try to manifest your intention in the world. That's where the horizontal pairs of opposites come in, particularly. You know, it's along with the elements as well. You know, you can look at the elements as opposite each other. Or as Carl Jung did, he divided psychology into the intuitional type and the thinking type and a sensation type, and then the feeling type and the thinking type. Is one necessarily better than the other? Not necessarily. It depends on what the need is. So I think the intuition is correct that at the center is the synthesis. And at the center, the synthesis is particularly initiatorily inclined as the center point begins to rise and synthesize all the other points into a perceived oneness. So you're effective in the world, and you're effective also on the axis of your spiritual interior life. And it's always rising. So the whole cross is always rising if we're doing the right job. I guess, you know, one could write an essay about that and come up with more, but that's my thought.
Chris asks, does the central point have an associated position that relates to each of the three bodies?
I want to make sure I understand that. Here's one thing that I think I can say. That from the time the earliest petals of the egoic lotus begin to receive attention, there is a constant rising of the cross. And let's just say that in the beginning, this central point will be very physically focused. But then, when the second petal of the egoic lotus comes, time for its opening, then the elevation, the pressure from below, the aspiration, will lead to a central point, which is more a point of tension within the emotional body, and that may last a long time. Now, only now are some human beings raising this cross to the point where the central point has to do with the mind nature, and the emotions are left behind in terms of the major concentration, and the soul is not yet reached. Now, there will come a time around the third initiation when the central point of the rising cross, and the horizontal will always help us deal with whatever atmosphere we happen to be in, whatever kind of energy situation we happen to be in. There will come a time, though, when the central point is the soul itself. And that will be the ability to focus at will within the causal body. And then the lower point will be the distractions of the concrete mind and whatever lies below them. And the higher point of the, or part of the cross, will be the spiritual triad, which has an impersonal point of view regarding all matters on earth. There will come a time when the cross rises and the spiritual triad becomes the central point. And anything to do with the lower concrete physical body of the planetary logos will be considered part of the lower arm of the cross. And the higher point will be the monad. Well, can the monad ever become the central point? It can. And then the planetary logos itself will, or the globe lord or the chain lord, you know, however that sequence may go, but some greater being will become the higher point, and the monad will be the central point. And everything that develops on the five planes of Brahma will be considered the lower part of the cross. So, yes, it can relate to the different aspects of our energy system ever rising. Now, most of us who really study decay probably have a central point which is in the concrete mind, or maybe the higher part of the concrete mind, just at that tipping point where we could begin to stabilize our consciousness in the soul. And DK tells us in Letters on Occult Meditation that we are not successful in our meditation because we have not yet learned to focus within the causal body. That will be our next central point. And the horizontal will rise along, and we'll be able to handle that particular atmosphere that our point of tension disposes us to deal with. In other words, the phenomena of any level have to be handled wisely, without forgetting handling wisely all the phenomena left behind. So in general, yes, there is a rising through the vehicles. And yes, the symbols of the and Veronica, yes, the symbols of the three crosses are involved in that. And sometime, what we'll have to do is, well, we'll come to it. You know, in the science of triangles meeting, I think we still have one today. I'm not sure how we'll deal with that schedule, but at least that is scheduled at 6 p.m. Today. Each one of those crosses has a story to tell, and we'll reach that point where we discuss those. But let's just say, if you're focused in your personality, the mutable cross is your major attraction. If you're focused within your soul, then the fixed cross, or at least receiving soul energy, then the fixed cross is your point of focus, tension. If you're focused cardinally, the way a master is and beyond, then it's the spirit aspect and the highest aspect of man, the advancing monad. That will be our focus. Okay, let's see what we got here. Small Gemini, large Sagittarius, personality Virgo, soul Pisces. Yes, all these things are possible, but you know, you can turn the tables. You can say, well, okay, look, Sagittarius sees the big picture and Gemini is still dealing with immediate factors, which are of less consequence, but you can switch all that around where Sagittarius becomes the animal, the centaur, and Gemini becomes the head of the cosmic Christ. So we cannot be absolute about stratifying the different signs of the zodiac. They can be used in three different ways minimally, and sometimes one can be higher than another, and sometimes the other can be higher than the one that was higher than it. So it just depends on where we stand on the path of evolution and how we're using the signs. But saying that they are elevated in a cut and dried way, we cannot do that. Okay. Anyway, it's a big study. It's a big study to see how we are handling the cross, because we must become the cross. We must mount the cross. We are pretty well mounted on the mutable cross. Some of us are in the transition period, which is a Piscean transition period between the mutable cross and the fixed cross. Some of us are securely nailed to the fixed cross for a while until the crucifixion would occur, or almost to that point. And no one here is nailed upon the cardinal cross in the larger sense, because you have to be a master for even the beginning phases of that to occur. So we're dealing with triangles, we're dealing with quadruplicities, and all of these have to be synthesized. Let's see if I understand you, Anne Veronica. I agree. I feel we passed through the zodiac at least four different ways. And, you know, really, the zodiac is the heart in the head center of the one about whom naught may be said. We're not done with this zodiac for trillions of years, either externally or internally. You say, I was talking about one of the ways we pass it. Uh-huh. Okay. Okay, yeah. Sure. Sure. Understood. And look, you have to look at your own chart and say, if I follow this energy, is it largely a personality tendency? Can I lift it to a soul tendency? Regardless of what the sign is, can I really live according to my rising sign? And if I did, how would my sun sign become a subcategory or subset of my rising sign? What is the true use of my rising sign in a soul sense? Because it's a very material aspect in the beginning of life, as many astrologers have noted. It has a lot to do with physicality and the body. But how can I use it in a way which brings me closer, as DK says, to the center of my life? And that's a question that everybody really has to ask. Now, obviously, we have to clear our perceptions. Our perceptions stand in the way when they are foggy and glamorous. They stand in the way of knowing how to go. We distort things, and we just head down paths that lead us nowhere or worse. So the clarification of consciousness, that's what we used to in the University of Seven Rays. We used to call the second group clarification of consciousness. And I think we can all see the value of clarifying consciousness, because otherwise we expend effort which can undo us and be not helpful to us or to anyone else. So first of all, we just have to stop this myopic running around, you know, that what does he call it, unthinking emotional mess, he calls it that, and observe, what are we really doing? And that's the purpose of our evening review, when we can stay awake to do it, okay, to see what we're really doing in the world and what energy we are really expressing. Okay. All right. Okay, thank you. These are interesting questions, and they have to do with the archetypes that underlie our life. The old saying is that God geometrizes, and the second ray is called something like the great geometer or the grand geometer, something of that nature. And when we understand the fundamental geometric relationships, we can understand the archetypes which determine our purpose, planetary purpose, solar systemic purpose. There are geometrical archetypes underlying all that is created. But again, the whole purpose of a group like this is to see clearly. And I don't think there's any one of us that does yet. So, to see clearly everything about ourselves, eventually, and our environment and our group life and planetary life, clarity of vision, that's what this is all about. Okay. Seems like we're at the point. So, let us have our little meditation, and we will, you know, well, you know, we're treading the path of discipleship here. At least we're trying to do that. All of our work now is about discipleship training, where maybe DK is taking people under his wing and training them in the various initiations, the first initiation really being the third, but for the rest of us, it's discipleship training, and that's what Alice Bailey basically said, and for the next century, it's pretty well going to be that, although I think that DK is going to hint at some of the greater practical possibilities when he begins writing around the year 2025. It will be most interesting to see how we follow out what has been given, because it'll have to be taken down and assimilated and applied, and then maybe we'll be ready for the Aquarian age of 2117. Okay. Now, let's see where we are here. Okay, we are here. This will be our glamour meditation. And, well, you know, I'm looking at the political arena these days and the conflict of various forms of idealism. The bridging power of the fourth ray, which will be coming in strength in 2025, is not yet fully with us, nor is the energy of Libra, which is growing in the planetary horoscope. And so we have this unrelenting glamour caused by the conflict of various kinds of ideals. Are you on the right? Are you on the left? Are you on the center? You know, where are you? What party, with the emphasis upon the word part, what party do you belong to? And holistic vision is not possible. Right-wing governments are taking over. Oh, there's a big pressure to the left. And it's so interesting how people are going for the extremes at this time, pushing the left agenda, pushing the right agenda, and not coming to the point where they can see the value in each other's approach. So let's meditate today on the glamours which arise, the hatreds which arise, the frictions, the wars which arise through the conflict of ideals. And of course, we're into the sixth ray area there to a certain extent. First ray and sixth ray together, you know, politically backed idealism and a kind of uncompromising point of view, which does not allow for the unification that is destined in the Aquarian age. Of course, this is going to fade, you know, it's going to fade either because the people with the ray components which are given to this kind of attitude will be no longer in incarnation, or it will fade also because it causes so much suffering among members of the human race that they just will repudiate it as non-workable. All right, let's enter. So we'll have some silence as we come together on the periphery of Master DK's ashram, as we imagine it. And in the silence, you can, you know, feel the group strengthening. We'll use the protective formula because we must never forget that this kind of work has its risks. So we'll make this cross of divinity involving the eyes as well as the forehead and the chest. As a soul, I work in light, and darkness cannot touch me. I take my stand within the light. I work, and from that point, I never move. And we'll see that cross as lighted, helping us keep our point of tension within the light of the soul illumined mind. Now we're going to work with a triple form of light, which we create in our imagination. We lift up the vital light of matter, and lift it to the area of mind where it joins the light of mind. So we have then vital thinking, reasoning, logic. And we bring down the light of the soul. We're aware of soul light, at least in the imagination. We bring it down onto the mental plane, from the higher mental plane. And we see as if the three lights becoming one light, which will generate our searchlight. each one of us has on the plane of mind, this triple light is one, and for the whole group, there is a triple light as one. And then we say the following mantra, followed by the sacred word. The light is one, and in that light shall we see light. This is the light that turns the darkness into day. Oh. Oh. Now we use together the formula, visualizing as we do, and during this time of the formula, a great searchlight is turned on, and visually it penetrates into the astral plane, and it detects glamour. And can dissipate it. Radiance are we and power. We stand forever with our hands stretched out, linking the heavens and the earth, the inner world of meaning and the subtle world of glamour. We reach into the light and bring it down to meet the need. We reach into the silent place and bring from thence the gift of understanding. Thus, with the light we work and turn the darkness into day. And then we will strengthen our being, which is projected onto the astral plane. The will descends to strengthen the beam. But first we visualize that beam. and it detects the fogs, the mists, the veils. And now we empower the beam with power upon its beam. The light is focused on the goal. As we use this word of power, let us have what we call a general cleansing of the astral plane, a general clarification of the veils which are responsible for so many glamours. Let us help to clear the darkness and the fog in general, so that after every clearing, the sun of truth shines brighter. The lies disappear. The veiling disappears. The sense of personality fades away. The sense of separateness fades away, and love and truth can truly penetrate our emotional life, and we see things as they are instead of in an exaggerated and biased manner. The power of our united light prevents the appearance of the general engulfing glamour. The power of our united light negates the quality of the general engulfing glamour from affecting humanity. The power of our united light destroys the life behind the general engulfing glamour. And as we have our silence, we visualize the light penetrating into the general condition of veiling and obscuration. Whatever veil we come across, it's as if the darkness is weakened and dissipates, and we visualize the sun, that great symbol, taking its place. So then, 5 minutes of silence. We see all the difficulties caused by the conflicting idealisms, none of them complete. And we look for mutual understanding in the light of the spiritual sun. This is one of the very prevalent problems today as the sixth ray fades. People will die for the part rather than attempt to see unity and wholeness. And the friction causes turmoil and a blinding process. Mars is so often blind, it's the sixth ray planet, one of the major ones, and all ideals are simply a part of the picture. If we can clear this as we make transition into the fourth ray and into the Aquarian age, we will enter that area of Libran peace. And so many of the glamours will, which cause war and unnecessary conflict, they will really begin to fade. A general clearing in the light of the sun. And an astral plane filled with love and light. Leading eventually to the appreciation of the one humanity and not separative frictions based upon narrow-minded, idealistic approaches. I think a very important thing is to see the fogs, the mists, the veils cleared by the great symbol of the sun. And it will be the sun of love, wisdom at this point in our planetary development and solar systemic development. So our next phase then is to withdraw our beam back imaginatively onto the mental plane, into that sphere of light from which it was generated. and realizing, acting as if we have done even a little bit to help clear the general glamour and that which causes so much conflict, friction, and disruption and turmoil. You know, when everything is filled with dust, the dust of battle, you cannot see. So we invoke the best parts of the coming fourth ray and of Libra to bring the long promised era of peace. It will not be immediate. But when we can see the other person's point of view, and they can see ours, the unity which humanity must become really begins to appear. So, an Om for each of the three vehicles which we act as if have been positively affected. We'll begin with the mental vehicle. Thank you all for attending and working together. We'll keep this up. We have alternating weeks. The way our schedule, Atui and I are working on a new schedule for 2019. The way our schedule stands right now, we do have a 6 o'clock p.m. Science of Triangles, and we're working with a very important triangle that involves Shambhala, hierarchy, and humanity. And I hope you have the link. And if you don't, just write to me or write to Joe Waltz or Michael Stacy or B.L. Allison, and they can give you the link. And we'll continue to work tomorrow in the morning. A soul of wealthy, no. That will be a problem. I have to change something because it's got to be evening tomorrow. I'm very sorry about that, but there's no way to avoid it. There's another activity in the morning that I have to take care of, and has to be an evening session. So I hope that we can, I'll try to have that sent out on Constant Contact. And then the next day will be the money meditation in the morning. Thank you, everyone, and we'll get this to you as soon as possible. Let your friends know that even if they could not attend this kind of meditation and discussion, that it is and will be available on YouTube and on Makara, especially. We'll talk to you later. All the best to everyone. Bye-bye.